TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's Raised by Wolves.
Yes, it is. Raised by Wolves. Welcome back in. Danny Cunningham, Dane Moore, Manny Hill with you as the NBA Finals are about to get rolling on. And no surprise, Minnesota Timberwolves not involved, just as we all expected. A couple things I want to get to. There will be plenty of NBA Finals talk on this podcast, as well as every other basketball podcast in the universe today. But I want to start with a couple of the hirings that the Wolves have made over the past couple of weeks, because I believe the first one was actually on the same day that Ryan Saunders was officially hired, and then the second one came down the other day. But they hired away Chasin Gupta, who was the assistant GM in Detroit and had previously spent time in Philadelphia and Houston. And they also hired Gianluca Pascucci, who was a guy that had...
Good job with those names, Danny.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm really happy because I was more nervous about Pascucci getting that one right. I'm not positive I'm getting...
I'm not sure you got either right, but we did get
a pronunciation. We got a pronunciation key from the Wolves on Gianluca Pascucci, and I think I'm getting that one right. I'm not so positive about Chasin Gupta because I've not heard anyone actually say that name. I have not got a pronunciation from the Wolves sent to us. So I'm guessing there, but I think I nailed the second one, so I'm happy about that. Good. That's a big win for me.
I was telling Dane before we started recording, how would you like to play a game of Scrabble with these three names?
Yeah.
Of these people that have now been
with the letters
the
in their names or against them,
or just both, just, you know, even trying to spell them, it'd be crazy.
And think about how easy of names we went from. I mean, Scott Layden and Tom Thibodeau. Thibodeau can be kind of tricky, but it's also Tom.
Right.
To now we've got Gersan Rosas, Chasin Gupta, and Gianluca Pascucci. That is quite a change. Now Ryan Saunders is still the easiest name in the book. So. We've got that going. New era of Wolves basketball. But I want to get initial reactions. And Pascucci spent time in Brooklyn. He's been part of some interesting things there. At least that's my understanding. But Dane, what's your takeaway from the organizations that they've been luring guys away from?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, because they're successful organizations or organizations that got the ball moving in the right direction. Obviously, when we look at Philadelphia and what Gupta did with Sam Hinkie there, and then the rebuild that Brooklyn has had. And Danny, we've talked about this before. I really struggle to assess executives, and I think we tend to draw a direct line to how good of an executive they are dependent on their team's success or failings. And I don't think that's fair. You can make good decisions and have them, the process of the decision can have been good and not worked out. It seems like with Gupta, we've done a good job of cherry picking the things that have been helpful, like dating back to 2010 when he traded Tracy McGrady or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know how good these guys are. The people I've texted, it's all been rave reviews, but I could have probably texted them any name and they would have said, yep, it's a good decision in the right direction.
And gotten that.
Maybe. It probably sounded, or I probably spelled it wrong or something like that. But, I mean, in all seriousness, and this, like, you know, dates back to before I was covering the NBA, and I am just the type of person who was fascinated by what happened in Philadelphia, and it's such a cool story and it's such a different way to think about basketball and the way you put a team together and to have... one of the main people there who made these really interesting, bold decisions makes me excited for a team that needs to make big and bold decisions to change a culture and to change a roster that is not ready to compete for a championship, as you alluded to, Danny. And yeah. I don't think they're ready to compete for the playoffs yet. So it's, you know, it's time to, you know, sprinkle Gupta dust all over this roster.
Is that a Dane Moore original there?
Did you come up with that one? That's good.
Tibbs
dust was a thing before you were here, Danny, where everyone assumed that all the Timberwolves point guards were going to become awesome because, like, Nate Robinson got really good under Tibbs, and, like, John Lucas III when Derrick Rose tore his ACL was like, what, he's averaging, like, 18 a game or something like that. So Tibbs dust was a thing. That seemed to have missed Tyus Jones's head over the past few years, but we'll see. I don't know. I mean, all you can do is I tend with executives to just kind of trust the process, if you will, and believe that they could kick my butt in Scrabble and in any sort of roster construction game. So, yeah.
I mean, it's...
Welcome back, Manny.
Yeah,
I haven't been here with you in a long time.
It's been just a busy couple of weeks here at Score North with just all the schedule changes and everything. But I think it's so hard to tell when you look at executives, to your point, Nane, about how good they're going to be and exactly what they're going to do. It's so hard to predict that and to speculate on, like, you know, what direction a team is going to go. But when I look at this offseason and the hirings that have been made, this just feels different from anything that this franchise in 30 years has done before, in that it just seems like it's so much more forward-thinking. And who knows how this team will look and how good they'll be 3 years from now. And, right, you know, when we have a better opportunity to sort of assess how good Gerson Rosas is doing with this team. But I just like the idea of what this could become because of the type of hires that they've made. Because this is a lot different from what we've seen before with this team.
The thing I do struggle with, and Dane, you brought this up, is it's really difficult to fairly evaluate executives because we don't know exactly what they all took part in, but right, it's interesting the things that went on in Philadelphia. Obviously, Sam Hinkie was the quote-unquote godfather of the process where they got really bad and they made a lot of really smart trades that still are paying off to this day, and the fact that Gupta was a big part of that I think is something that's encouraging. And I know you found a great tweet from Sam Hinkie the other day where there was an article, I think it was written by Derek Bodner, who's now with The Athletic, used to be with Philly Magazine. And he wrote a kind of a profile on Gupta, and Sam Hinkie
quoted it
said, "I love the article, but the headline should read, 'This is the guy behind all of Sam Hinkie's trades,' not just the specific one that was mentioned there."
It's interesting to me in thinking about that, and what Sam Hinkie probably did in Philadelphia was he was the top of the pyramid, right? And that taps into all these different areas of basketball, from operations to development to coaching. And I think that's what Gerson Rosas is going to be here. And then, yet again, if what Hinkie's saying is accurate, that Gupta will be that guy who really is isolated in the silo of, you know, roster construction. And Rosas will be overseeing that, but won't pretend to be the one who's putting in more effort into that than Gupta, because I think from my conversations with Rosas are that he really wants top to bottom this organization to be specialized. And Rosas will oversee all that and make sure the specializations are the way he wants them to be specializing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it does feel like Gupta's going to be the guy making roster decisions. And that I like the idea of specialization more than I even like the hire, because I believe in that.
It also seems like he wants a lot of different voices in the room. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a good thing, because I do think that the whole questioning the norm mantra that he's been spitting out left and right at both of his media availabilities to date in the Twin Cities, I think that having a lot of voices in the room is going to do nothing but help push that forward.
I'm with you. That's just human nature, right? Like, we've all had jobs, different type of jobs, and, you know, you're helped when you have people who are giving you constructive criticism and bouncing ideas off of you. When you isolate yourself to being the only one thinking about something, you miss out. And to just, you know, open that lens up a little bit, I think, is just a smart idea in all business.
I'm really intrigued by what the identity of this club is going to be 2 or 3 years from now.
Sure.
And also how the process is going to go about over the next couple of years. It's hard to envision this roster looking dramatically different next year than it did in 18-19, but you get the sense they're going to play much differently than what we've seen in the last couple of years.
But I don't think we know what type of different.
But we don't know what, and that's actually really, really intriguing to me. Like, I'm excited to be surprised and sort of, you know, very observant of how this team is going to play going into next year, even though they may not look dramatically different, you know, in terms of personnel and roster.
Yeah, and they're not going to turn into what the Milwaukee Bucks were this year, but the Bucks are kind of an example of that, where they have for the most part, and some role players have changed a little bit, like they adding Brook Lopez and Nikola Mirotic was a rental towards the end of the season, same with George Hill, but if you look at a lot of their roster, there are a lot of similarities between a team that won 44 games 2 years ago and a team that won 60 games. They just changed the style of play. Now, granted, I think that their style of play under Jason Kidd and Joe Brunty was far behind the times for what their roster suited, and they upgraded to something to exactly what it should have been. But I think that you could look at, okay, they're going to look much different despite being the same guys for the most part.
I think it starts with roster construction.
Yeah.
And because that indicates what the best style of play you can run is. And I wouldn't be surprised if the identity we see next season looks different than what it is 3 years from now, because I think the goal to build the champion is to, I hate when people just say compiling assets, but to compile this roster of strength and talent and assets that can allow you to pivot when you see the move come. I mean, I think about even Toronto. We don't necessarily think of they made this huge stylistic change. They went and got Kawhi. Mm-hmm. But even if you look back, 3 years, Toronto was a good team, mm-hmm. with a lot of talent and players that allowed them to be in a place to trade Jakob Poeltl, DeMar DeRozan in a first,
yeah,
for Kawhi Leonard. So I think you will see the team be put together, and they'll be playing in one way, and then once they're ready to go for it, like when Kat's 25 or something like that,
they'll look completely different.
Then there's a different roster, and there's maybe even a different style of play. But right now it's about getting the ball rolling in that direction that's forward. And I think that's going to happen.
It's interesting you bring up Toronto as that example, because if you look, everyone thinks of this era of Raptors basketball starting and when they made it to the conference finals in 2015-16. But if you think about it, there are only two guys that will be playing in the finals that were on that first conference finals team. That's Kyle Lowry and Pascal Siakam, I think.
That's amazing.
Or Kyle Lowry and it just might be Kyle Lowry. Like, that's it.
Right. Wow. Then you can kind of just draw those lines, though, of you created space in this sort of way. I mean, draft Jonas Valanciunas that becomes Marc Gasol. And mm-hmm. by developing Valanciunas and not letting him become an obsolete big in the NBA, you're able to work that sort of trade out. So it's just about this intention every single step of the way to develop and maintain the value of your entire roster. And you want to talk about the Timberwolves, that's something like Gorgui Dieng, It's how do you make him relevant enough to either be a part of your future or to be someone that you can move for the future, Marc Gasol, whatever that may be down the road.
And it was Kyle Lowry and Norm Powell, for the record, but maybe go on.
No, I was just going to say, Danny, you and I, when we've done Show of Hands and other podcasts, we've talked about, I'm interested to see what they do with Gorgui Dieng next season, provided they don't move him this summer. But how do they make him better to increase his value to either help this team long term or to be able to move him, long term, because it's easier to move him because you've made him a better player and it's closer to the end of the contract and things like that.
How about a step further of how do you use Gorgui Dieng to make the players around him better?
Yeah.
Because that was such an issue. And even when he was starting alongside Kat and playing a lot alongside Kat years back, it didn't quite work. The numbers might have been better, but the way Gorgui played was often in Kat's way, mm-hmm. or those sort of things. So how do you optimize the way you use Gorgui every game, whether it's 16 minutes a night or whatever that may be, to not obsess about improving the asset of his PER or his defensive rating? How do you make the team better so as to make everything a little bit more appealing? I think that's the best way you can go about it.
Yeah, 100% agree.
Yeah, I'm with you, and that's how they're going to have to figure things out. And it's going to be an interesting road to where they are now, how they look next year, how they look in 3 years. I think that it could look incredibly different 12 months from now, and then even more different 24 months from then. It really could be a bit of a wild ride. But all right, I want to move on to the NBA Finals because mm-hmm. that's where we're at. That's the most interesting part of the season, obviously. And well, depending on who you talk to, but really excited for it. Raptors, Warriors. First off, Dane, are you surprised that the Eastern Conference Finals finished in the fashion that it did?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I was on Milwaukee kind of all along. And I know as I went through every one of those series and you hear what everyone else was saying, and I often look at the Vegas odds of where they're putting it in every series. I was like, I think Milwaukee has a better chance of winning than what everyone's suggesting, and I thought that against Toronto too. But in kind of being able to look back at it, a lot of people are pointing to the lack of experience that Milwaukee had. And I think that's like a little bit too simple. I think it's the style of play that they play with didn't have playoff experience.
Mm-hmm.
The going with a almost 7 foot Giannis being this like kind of point guard for you who drives and dishes to guys around him on the perimeter. They'd had wild success with that during the regular season, but they hadn't ever leaned into it in that capacity in the playoffs. And I think what we learned is they didn't have enough experience, so it wasn't effective enough. I mean, Toronto absolutely shut that down in the half court setting. So next year they will have more experience with that. And I think their offense one way or the other will look very similar, but it's important to make it to the finals if they want to go further to have little audibles off of that,
yeah,
in ways, additional creators, additional just schematics that they can do to have that. But that's something I would say I overlooked. And
I think a big factor is Giannis lost confidence. I think that was something that everyone could see. He was not only scared to shoot, but he, towards the end of that series, he got scared to go to the rim and get fouled because he didn't want to go to the free throw line. I had never seen
a charge. I mean, Kyle Lowry ducking in like that all the time.
Which Kyle does all the time. That's totally not like a Giannis-specific thing. Kyle, that's one of the things Kyle is very good at defensively. Mm-hmm. But I had never seen a player get fouled and while up in the air change to a pass to avoid going to the free throw line. And Giannis did that at one point in the series. And that was super eye-opening to me. Like, maybe this guy's not ready for this stage.
His jump shot's not.
His jump shot certainly is not.
And that's just an interesting wrinkle. I mean, he's a phenomenal player, but it's in 2019, you know, how do you make that work?
Is he a, right now, and this is always subject to change, but right now it seems like he's an 82-game player, not a 16-game player.
They still have a pretty good season. Pretty good playoffs.
They had a good season, but they beat a Detroit team that...
What if you have another creator on that team, though? Like, because Bledsoe wasn't that as they hoped
it
to be.
He is certainly an 82-game player. I am ready to close the book on that. He is not
and
a 16-game player.
They got him locked up.
Oh, yeah.
But Middleton, too, is a... This, I don't mean this to be like hyperbolic, but his style of offensive play is similar to Wiggins,
mm-hmm,
where he's more comfortable in creating off of, you know, one dribble of space or stepping into a three. Mm-hmm. He's not someone who's going to attack you north south, mm-hmm, and distribute out of that well or just get to the rim. And the bummer, I think, if you're Milwaukee, is you recognize that as a big need, and who becomes that? You know, who becomes that? I think that's a big need for Giannis. So who becomes that for that team when you're kind of in this situation where you're like, well, we can pretty much just bring back the guys we have.
Yeah.
Does Brogdon, you know, take another step forward to be a really dynamic attacker? I mean, he was really good in the play. I mean, exceeded my expectations of that in the playoffs.
After coming back from an injury.
Right.
And he had a really good season. He was a 50-40-90 guy. Like, that's really, really hard to do.
Totally. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, they got their shooters. They got their defenders. But in the playoffs, you need to have guys who can isolate and effectively scoring. Obviously, Giannis is one of those guys, but I really think they need to find a way to craft something that allows another player to be that too.
And the big question with Milwaukee now is, what are they going to look like next year? Because Middleton is a free agent.
Yeah.
Brogdon is a restricted free agent. I mean,
Brooke Lopez
was
a
big
lot
part
of
what they
someone.
Did. And yeah, I mean, it's not only, you know, can... The question is not only can Giannis add, you know, a perimeter shot to his game, but what is this team going to look like? I mean, because there are guys that played a huge role in a 60-win team this year that are going to be free agents, and you really don't know what's going to happen with them and how far the front office is going to want to go to pay these guys and bring them back and keep this core together.
Isn't that just like the kind of fascinating thing about the way that the NBA does salary structures is once you kind of get to this point, it's basically you got to bring your guys back.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be like, oh, crap, we don't have a second creator. Time to, like, go out and sign Lou Williams. Like, no. Like, that's – you don't have the flexibility to be able to go out and do that. Even if Chris Middleton is better than Lou Williams, like, in a vacuum,
yeah,
like, you just – You're so restricted once you're over the cap to basically be able to bring your own players back. And I think about the second run of Kobe and the Lakers,
mm-hmm,
and what they did such a good job of was they hit this like capped out point, but they were able to bring back Lamar Odom able to bring back, you know, Pau Gasol, and it worked. The pieces they had when they were ready, when they hit their financial ceiling, it was like, we're cool with this group. And I don't know. I think you look at Milwaukee and go, everyone's like, well, I think they're going to bring everyone back. And I'm like, okay, you just lost to Toronto. Like, Philly's going to be better next year. Is Boston going to get Anthony Davis? Like,
Kyrie Irving question is a big deal there. But
KD moving over there?
Is New York going to get really good?
Yeah. It's a scary thing. And to bring it back to Sam Hinkie, that was his whole thing. And I remember he spoke at Sloan 2 years ago, and he talked specifically about Boston going and getting Kyrie. And he goes, did they move in too soon? Yeah. Kyrie's a phenomenal player, but it's so important to put your chips in when you're ready to put your chips in. And if your goal is ultimately a championship, Milwaukee, you're like, I'm not saying they're screwed or anything. Like,
right.
They could figure it out, but timing is so huge in this league.
And it seemed as if they had a little bit of a magic to them this year. I think that that's fair to say. And it's hard to capture that 2 years in a row. That's not always there. You can't always expect that to be there. Boston had it last year, did not have it this year.
Yeah.
Like, that's just one of those things. And I also have questions about if Bud's coaching style can be successful on that kind of level, because we've seen him have some really good teams, and I think he did more in the regular season with those Atlanta teams than he probably should have been able to do. But then once you get to the playoffs, it's a different story, and I don't know if that style is ever going to get them over the top.
I don't know. It's a
bummer. And there's no right answer. There's no real answer to that question right now, because it's either you do or you don't, and we never will know until he either does it or retires.
Right. Two of my best friends are Milwaukee Bucks fans, and I guess I would have thought if we rewind like 6 months, if we were like, oh, this is where the Bucks get to. They get to the Eastern Conference Finals, and they're really close to going to the finals.
Mm-hmm.
Would you be happy with that? I would have said yes. I mean, definitely. That's a heck of a season.
Sure.
But, I mean, maybe they're just kind of in the moment. But there's just kind of this deflating feeling, I feel, from them, from my friends, that it's, well, yeah, we got this far, but how do we get further? And that's the ultimate goal.
And go on, Manny.
Well, no, I was going to say, especially when you factor in their best player, their superstar is 24 years old. It's not like this is the last hurrah for Giannis before, you know, he's going to be a free agent this summer or anything like that. I mean, he still has room to grow as a player. And then if you're a Bucks fan and your season ends like this, you're like, okay, well, we have Giannis, but there's so many question marks. Like, did our window just
I like that comparison kind of better than I like the Anthony Davis one, because the Anthony Davis one is just so like hot. It's just a mess.
Yeah,
you know. But the Giannis one, it seems to be more, I could see paralleling a little bit better to Cat, where it's like, again, all right, he's escalated to superstar status, but do you have enough around him? I mean, I think if you're the Wolves, you need to think about it. Like, we probably need our second best player to be a lot better than Chris Middleton, because they had Chris Middleton, who was an all-star, but they had a lot of really good role players around him. Still not enough. So it's that clock starts ticking, and I hate when everyone's like, oh, it's going to be Anthony Davis 2.0. Like, I don't think that. It might be Giannis 2.0, and we'll see exactly what unfolds there in the next 2 years.
Yeah, and I also think we're kind of skewed because we don't know if they'll ever get back to two wins away from being in the finals. We're kind of skewed because the Warriors have been to five straight. LeBron went to eight straight. Mm-hmm. It's been the same thing over and over and over again. Yeah. And the history of the NBA will tell you it's not always going to be like that. We don't know that the Bucks will ever be back. And I think that it was kind of proven with LeBron leaving the East this year that teams are ready to go for it that just weren't ready the past 8 years, in part because there was this guy that just prevented anyone from doing anything. And that's gone now. So I do think Philadelphia is going to get better, and that matters too.
I remember, Danny, you probably remember when the Wolves went to the Western Conference Finals in 2004 and they lost to the Lakers. And then Shaq got traded that summer over to the Eastern Conference, and we knew the Lakers were going to take
us there.
You thought, okay, we're bringing Sam and Spree back, and KG's just coming off an MVP year. And it's like, and I remember the next year, they got off to a nice start. They were at the top of the Western Conference, and then everybody just started bickering at contract. I mean,
as it inflates, it can deflate.
Yeah, exactly.
As far as the actual series going on, there's a lot of interesting things. I think number one is whether or not Kevin Durant's going to play, where he's a top three basketball player in the world. We don't know his status after he's not playing tonight. Game two sounds incredibly unlikely for him to play. But is it I'm struggling with how to put this because it's important that he plays, but also the Warriors can absolutely win without him. Does that matter for his legacy?
Does it matter for Kevin Durant's legacy if they win the championship
if a team
and he
that
doesn't
he's,
play?
Yes, does not play at all in this series.
I'm a bad legacy analyzer. To me, no. Like, you got hurt. I don't know. He's been a largely really healthy player. Like, fortune.
Other than the foot. The year he lost to a foot.
And also for a really big, kind of lanky dude. Like, his whole, like, leg is his calf. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it's... I still think he's the best player in the NBA. And I know that this narrative has switched to Kawhi, and I really don't mean to take away from Kawhi at all. It's been phenomenal. But, I mean, Kevin Durant is phenomenal and has this opportunity to, in the next chapter of his, you know, NBA story, to continue to be phenomenal. And if this happens this year and they don't win it, or they do win the championship without him, he still gets the ring. He was still a huge part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a less, but I mean, I'm not putting any sort of asterisk next to that ring, I don't think.
Sure.
For me.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, the Warriors won a title without him before. You know what I mean? So it doesn't
like
really.
You signed up for this. Like, you signed up for a team that could win a championship without you.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, and let's be honest, even the year the Cavs won, the Warriors had a game 7 at home. They won 73 games, and they were, you know, a basket or two, or they were, you know, an Andre Iguodala layup that LeBron blocked away from actually winning the title again that year. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, without Kevin Durant, and I mean, it doesn't change anything one way or the other for me as far as Kevin Durant, because I remember feeling like when they won the title 2 years ago and Durant got his first ring, it was like, okay, great player, wins a title on a great team. But it didn't, I mean, my feelings on Kevin Durant then have not changed to this point now at all, regardless of if he plays in the finals or not.
If you want to blow away your legacy and be awesome, awesome, like, then go to New York and do it. Go somewhere else and do it.
Like, it but feels that's like really that's hard what's to coming, yeah.
I think you're right. I think that could very well happen, and that would be such a bigger bound, you know, forward than this would be a step backwards. I know those are kind of different questions, but you just got to look at the aggregate sample of what Kevin Durant has done since he became a Golden State Warrior, and it's phenomenal.
I think I kind of look at it as if Durant goes to the Knicks, and let's say Kyrie goes there with him, and they win a title together in X amount of years or whatever, that to me would hold so much more weight than the two titles that he won in Golden State, even though, or two or three
kinda
titles
like,
he won in Golden
State.
Kind of
like Bron when he went back
to Cleveland.
Yeah,
I was just going to say, just like with LeBron versus his Cavs title versus his two titles with the Heat, you still acknowledge him as a great, great player, but then, like, you look at LeBron and the title he won in Cleveland, like, that just holds so much more weight than the two titles that he won in Miami. And it would be the same thing with Kevin Durant.
I think LeBron would tell you that, too. I think LeBron would tell you that the title that means the most to him is 2016, not only because of where it took place, but because of how it took place and who it took place against. I think that those things all matter, too, and there's no telling what a situation like Durant
could be. Well, it's kind of when he became GM LeBron, too, right? Like, he kind of, like, put that team together more so than I think he did Miami. And
I don't know if I'd go that far. I think Griff did a lot there.
In conjunction, I don't know. That team felt so much more to me like LeBron's team than the Miami ones did. And maybe that's just because of who Wade is there.
Yep.
But like, if Kevin Durant goes to New York or wherever, like, that is going to be the cocktail that he crafts.
Mm-hmm.
And
boy, if they win a title there, boy.
Right. I hope, if he somehow something miraculously happens where it's him and Anthony Davis there, I hope people don't give him the whole, like, just teaming up with stars again sort of thing. It's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You need to win a championship. You need to be with stars.
Yeah.
Like, unless Kawhi does it this year, then he'll have pretty much done it on his own, one superstar. But
all right, let's go there then. What can the Raptors do, and how competitive is this series going to be?
What can they do? Molasses. Slow it down as much as possible. I mean, they
are you talking like 2015 finals Cavs slow?
I'm talking about game six. That game was 87 possessions each way. That is like that is not 2019. If you can, and you know what, I think they can goat the Warriors into that a little bit more. Everyone's like, oh, just, you know, just run, like run if you're the Warriors. Like then you got Gasol on the move. You got your pick and roll like mismatches that you can that they can tap into, but if they are able to slow it down, I think Toronto has a half-court defense that can run with them. I mean, this is as good of a defense as they have played against. That's your route for me. And then it comes from, obviously, you need Kawhi to be supernova, but also on the offensive end, there are other surrounding role players. Like, you need Van Vliet again. You need Lowry to play at the same level he did. It's, I mean, just the way they play basketball in going as much as they do through Kawhi in pick and roll action or isolation is it's so important to have catch and shoot shooters there actually making their shots. So that's very broadly the way.
The pace thing is very interesting to me because if you look back at 2015 when the Warriors won in six and the Cavs didn't have Kyrie or Kevin Love, that finals, it was 90 possessions a game. That the pace was 90.7. 2016, the year the Cavs won, it was 92. So they successfully slowed the Warriors down.
Interesting.
And then when Kevin Durant arrived, the pace jumped up to 100 back in 2017 for the first year. And then last year's finals, it was down to 90 again, but the Cavs just, LeBron had nothing to do. Like, he had no one to help him, really.
And it's possible. I mean, that's the illustration that they can do it again. It's not like the Warriors have evolved into this way more pacey team. Mm-hmm. Like, they can turn it on or they can turn it off. The thing is they think that they can beat you in any fashion. So get them to play your game, and I mean that's their best shot. I just personally think there's so many question marks. I mean, you can every player who's not Kawhi on that team, you know, who I respect a lot of those guys, but there's question marks of like, okay, great, Fred VanVleet, like you went off in the conference finals. You know
what? Can you do it again?
You stunk against Philly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like Marc Gasol.
And you stunk for part of the conference finals.
Yeah,
it's not like he was good all finals. He was good for the last, what, three games?
I mean, it was awesome. But it's just Toronto props for getting to the Eastern Conference Finals. You haven't played that well the entirety of the playoffs. I mean,
right.
It was very close to falling down 3-0 to Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. Very close. I mean, there's numerous times. And then against Philadelphia, it was possession or two away from falling back 3-1. Like, this hasn't been some like rampage they did through the Eastern Conference where you're like, look out for the Raptors. It's like the Raptors narrowly beat everyone and they need to be playing at a much higher level than that, obviously, to beat Golden State. And Golden State's the best defense they played.
Yeah.
It's a tall task.
I mean, didn't Milwaukee finish number one defensively?
Wouldn't you say, though? I mean, if you're Nick Nurse, you go, who do I want my guys going out? I'm going to choose the five guys that are out there.
Sure.
I think I would rather play against Milwaukee.
Sure.
Defensive, just on the defensive side of the floor.
I understand that, and that makes sense. But it's not as if the Bucks were a slouch of a defense. And
absolutely
when you flip
not,
that around, the Raptors are by far the best defense that the Warriors will face in the playoffs so far because Portland's defense, really nothing to write home about. Houston had a really good defense the second half of the year, but overall was not great. And then the Clippers played them hard, but they're also the Clippers.
Opponents shooting 31% from three against them.
Mm-hmm.
That's against Toronto's defense.
Okay.
31% from three against them. That's awful. Third best in the playoffs. They've been elite defending isolations, 0.73 points per possession, best in the playoffs, and elite defending the pick and roll, 0.76 points per possession, second best in the playoffs. Excellent in a half court set. They get it.
Mm-hmm.
There is a seamless understanding of where to go and to understand the numerous spots you need to be going. I mean, the way the second line of their defense has defended has been excellent.
It feels like there are six guys on the court for them at times. Like, that's how it genuinely, like, it's funny to say, but it felt like against Milwaukee for the last four games, or at least the last three games, it felt like there were six guys in their half-court defensive sets.
But is it funny, the other side of that is when you're playing against Golden State, it feels like they have six guys open. It's like, it's Clay's wide open in the corner? Like, how did he get
there?
Are there two
Why?
Of you? Like, it's I'm with you, but it's just a tall task.
I think they're long enough, Toronto, being, I think Toronto is long enough to really make this interesting in the half court setting, because you've got three guys that got all defensive team votes. Now, I don't know if Kawhi deserved to be second team all defense because he didn't play that well during, he treated the regular season like 60 practice games. But Danny Green deserves votes. Pascal Siakam deserves votes. And then you've got Serge Ibaka really long. Marc Gasol's a good defender, is a big.
Yep.
Do you think that they can force the Warriors to try and play a little bit bigger?
Bigger? I think it's about how you use that length. And I don't think the Warriors will oblige and be like, oh, we have to play bigger. I think you use that length to get Steph or whoever off of the three-point line and into the... Because I think the strength of the defense is that second line. And Gasol's ability to defend multiple people at one time. And Siakam's excellent at that, too. So I keep hearing, you know, you listen, as you alluded to, Danny, there's been a million NBA preview podcasts. And
yes,
I hear all of this.
All of them. Ours is the best.
Kawhi on Draymond. And I understand that makes a lot of sense. He's the most frequent, you know, ball screener. You want to be able to switch that and have Kawhi there. If it were me, I think the weapon you have is Kawhi's size and length to be able to push Steph off the line.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what I would do,
and,
too.
I mean, have him fight to get over all those screens.
Make him work.
And, yeah, and make him work so that he has to then come, and which Steph is good at, mm-hmm. come in and penetrate, but make him find that sixth offensive player, if you will, you know? And it's, if you start burying Lowry, something like that, I mean, that's where, you know, and obviously what Lowry's wingspan is a lot shorter than Kawhi's, like, I just want to get Steph, particularly when KD's not there. I want to get Steph off of the three-point line as much as possible and get him, you know, moving towards the basket. I think that's the best thing you can do. And that's where Toronto's length and size, you know, comes. That's where I see the value in it. So it'll be interesting to me to see what did Kawhi do in game one.
So where do you put Kyle Lowry then defensively? If you are putting Kawhi on Steph, which I agree with, that if I were coaching the Raptors, I would want Kawhi on Steph, especially with Durant out. When Durant comes mm-hmm. back in, it obviously changes things. But where do you put Kyle Lowry then?
Who's starting for Golden State? There's all these like weird questions.
We will say that Golden State tonight will start Steph, Clay, Draymond, Iguodala,
and
probably Boogie.
Yeah, Boogie or Looney.
I would think, yeah. Boogie or Looney. I mean, matchup-wise, that's going to be Gasol either way, I think. I think Gasol's going to start on whoever their center is, so I'm not mm-hmm. sure how much that changes mm-hmm. everything.
I think it would be interesting to put him on Iggy.
Mm-hmm.
And be able to use Lowry off the ball. I think that's where more of his strength is, and getting a passing lane, as you alluded to earlier, Danny, his ability to, you know, take charges or just simply get in the way, yeah. like a fire hydrant. And I don't know. I've heard a lot more, you know, having him on Steph, but it's hard. Obviously, you're sacrificing some size there. I mean, they'll just probably then move Iguodala to the dunker spot and, you know, work from there and, you know, take the center out. I mean, there's this whole chess match to it. But to me, like, it's the classic, don't get beat by Steph.
Yeah.
Make somebody else beat you and you know, and find a way to do that. I mean, Kyle Lowry, even if it's Draymond, you know, even if he switched on to Draymond on a post-up, like, cool. Like, I'll take Kyle Lowry defending Draymond post-up. Like,
well, all Draymond wants to do in that post-up is pass.
Yeah.
He doesn't look to score. When the Warriors post guys, with the exception
passed
now of
passed out of
Boogie,
81% of his post-ups
yes,
this season.
Exactly.
81.
Other than Boogie, and I don't know the numbers of this, but I'm going to make an assumption here. Boogie and when Durant posts up too, those guys look to score. When it's someone else, mm-hmm. they post up to pass because they're so good at cutting and setting things
right.
up out of
smart.
That.
Yeah.
Very smart, but it's also not what a lot of NBA teams mm-hmm. have traditionally done, so it looks so much different. But I would be fine putting him on having Draymond post up Kyle Lowry. That's a right. win for the Raptors.
Yeah. And I mean, it's going to change once you start mixing in bench players. I guess I've heard from my listening to podcasts that Fred VanVleet was awesome on Steph Curry during the regular season, which, like, if I've learned anything from these playoffs, I'm like, to no. what happened during the regular
also,
season matchups.
Also, neither,
but, like,
none of these rosters were set. I don't believe. I know Steph
missed
Draymond, a game.
No Draymond, no Steph the first game.
I think Kawhi might have missed a game. I know the Raptors are only the second team in the Steve Kerr era to sweep the Warriors, joining the 2016-17 Indiana Pacers, I believe. So kudos to that team for that. But these teams, Marc Gasol didn't play in either game.
Yeah.
Kawhi missed a game, I think. These two teams that we're seeing in the finals, we are truly seeing them play for the first time.
Yeah, no Kawhi in the second game, and naturally, Toronto won by 20.
Yeah.
So
they were really good. I think they went like 16-5 or 15-5 without Kawhi this year. They were really good when Kawhi didn't play.
Which leads us to another point of the other guys on Toronto. They might not have that superstar, but they've been awesome this year.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
The sum of their parts is a superstar.
I was just going to ask, who is the most, for Toronto, who is the most important non-Kawhi player for them in this series?
I'm really interested to see what Gasol can do. And like, can you figure out a way to make it so he's not getting switched into those pick and rolls against Steph? Like, that's going to be an issue. Like, can they effectively pre-switch that to send Siakam up there? Or Kawhi? I mean, I just think Gasol is very important to that second line of their defense, and to be able to keep him back there is how I think you slow down Golden State. But if Golden State finds a way to play him off the floor, like, I think you're dead.
Yeah.
I think you're dead. So that, I don't know. I mean, the shooter's got to make their shots.
That's where I wanted to go, because Danny Green was awful in the conference finals. Pascal Siakam has not shot the ball well. If Siakam can hit from the corners and Danny Green can hit open threes, which, I mean, Danny Green can finish top three in the NBA in three-point percentage in the regular season, which I know means nothing right now, but he's a really good three-point shooter. At some point, they have to fall.
Siakam, 30% from the corner. Mm-hmm. Green, 28% from the corner in the playoffs.
Yeah. If Danny Green can make shots, it becomes a much better outlook for Toronto, because he's a good defender. He's someone that you can stick him on Klay Thompson. I know you can't stick anyone on Klay Thompson and be like, all right, that's settled, but it's a big help. You feel confident if he's matching up with Klay on that end, but you also need him to hit some shots so we can stay on the floor.
It's the whole Rocket, the Daryl Morey adage of, yeah, we're betting that we're going to bomb threes and make 40% of them in four games, and we don't think you can't out offenses us if you do that. And Toronto's really good defensively, but offensively it's not all that different, particularly with Kawhi and the way they're playing in the playoffs, than what Houston does. It's Kawhi isolations, Kawhi pick and rolls, and guys around there needing to make catch and shoot shots. That's it. And so I mean, we'll probably talk about it at the end. I don't really think Toronto has a very good chance in this, but that is the chance.
Yeah.
That is the chance, is to Houston Rockets them. And four games, just be dominant from three, along with Kawhi's dominance in his individual game. That's the wild card in the modern NBA that you could play. It's like, well, tonight we shot 50%. Like, look at half the opponents to the Wolves all year.
Math, baby.
Yeah. Well, I look at the way the Spurs beat the Miami Heat when Danny Green was there. It was Danny Green bombing threes. It was Patty Mills bombing threes. Manu Ginobili even knocking down. I mean, that was sort
Boris
of
the Boris DL slingshot pass to like open Danny Green. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I'm more than anything, I just hope this series goes seven games. It would be so much fun if this series can go seven games, even if Golden State ultimately wins it. But I just want to see this series
go seven
games.
Do you guys think
it
will? Like, I mean, I'm hoping, Zach Lowe, who we all like, you know, bow down to, I guess, is like, he has that seven. Are we wishing this?
I don't know if we're wishing it, but I do think that if the Warriors are forced to adjust to make Kevin Durant reacclimate to their style, I'm not saying that that gives the Raptors an edge, but I think that that might help them in a game or two, because it's going to take some time for one Durant to find his rhythm again. The Warriors are going to feel like they need to overly include Kevin Durant, because that's just how it gets at times. Mm-hmm. And I think that that could ultimately help the Raptors in a very short sample size. And these series is, they're short sample sizes. I'm not saying that's going to give the Raptors a title, but that could extend the series. And if Toronto wins one of these first two or both of these first two, which are at home, and it's the first time in the Steve Kerr era that the Warriors don't have home court advantage in a series, then the series is going to be a long one, because they're going to find a way to win it in Oracle, but then they're going to have to come back to Toronto, and then it's going at least six.
Yeah. I think the difference we have, and I'm not saying you're wrong here, because it's what's a huge question mark, is that if KD is healthy, that the acclimation process. I have less concerns about that, but who knows? That's just a kind of a guess from both of us.
We don't know how much pressure there will be on him. I think what the series is at when he comes back makes a big difference. If they're down 2-0 and they need Kevin Durant to come back, and we don't know how healthy Kevin Durant is, they could be in a world of trouble, especially trying to get him adjusted on the fly, trying to find a rhythm, and he's not healthy. That could be bad news for them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's still hard for me to, like, even if I know there's no KD, the whole series, it's just it's hard for me to really give Toronto. I mean, they need to be Dallas of 2011.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which, like, Dallas of 2011 was awesome. And the other team kind of falls apart, mm-hmm. like beats themselves. And to your point, Danny, like the Warriors certainly have that like in their bag. Not really in the finals, though. Well, I guess they blew a 3-1 lead. But
they did blow a 3-1 lead in the finals. They're the only team in the history of the NBA to do that.
Vegas has the Warriors 75% chance to win the series. And that
just, I think that's accurate, but I think it's higher. I think it's pretty accurate. I think that the Raptors have a legitimate chance to win this series.
I think they need a lot of things to go their way, and I think that that could potentially happen.
25% of the time, though, too much, man. Too much, in my opinion. I
think it's pretty accurate. I wouldn't pick the Raptors to win, but I wouldn't be surprised if they did win. There's not an outcome in this series that would surprise me.
I would be shocked if the Toronto Raptors win. I'm willing to eat that if it happens. But I'm cheering for it. Like when I'm sitting there, you turn it on, you'd be like, yeah, Marc Gasol.
Well, I would like to see Toronto win just because of the gambles that they took, and I want that to pay off. The Warriors have not been in a position where they have had to gamble on anything since July 4th, 2016. They've had to take no gambles since then because they signed a top three player in the world. The Raptors traded away their most beloved player in franchise history for a true superstar. That's a gamble that they didn't necessarily need to make, especially with LeBron leaving. The East was wide open. That team won 59 games. You could have run it back and said, we can get to the finals. The only reason we haven't been in the finals the last 3 years is because of LeBron James, and he's gone. If you're Masai Ujiri, you could have looked yourself in the mirror and said that and truly believed it. Now, would it have been true? I don't know, but you could have believed it and had reason to believe it. Instead, they went out and they made one of the gutsiest moves that they could have made in getting Kawhi, who very well could be a rental, and then trading for Marc Gasol. I applaud what they did and the upgrades they made and the guts that it took, and I would love to see that pay off for them.
Yeah, it's the frustration we've had with it being the same. I mean, and that's just natural in sports. It's the same reason people don't like the Patriots, you know, or the Yankees back, you know, a couple decades ago. We get sick of it. And I think, in my opinion, what's creeping in for people is this, you know, the hate you have for the dominant team and wanting to paint a picture where Fred VanVleet is awesome again because he had a kid, and Norman Powell, who like didn't really even play in the rotation, is like the super important seventh man. Oh yeah, and Danny Green's going to go back to being like
the 2013 final
Spurs Danny Green.
Like those things all need to happen. Like those all need to happen.
They all need to happen. Yeah.
And like, do you want to do that times that times that? Like, that's not 25% in my opinion. As much as I would love to see it, it's just I don't know.
I mean, I'm just saying Danny Green has shot 55% from three in the finals before. He has done that. It's a real thing that did happen throughout a 7-game series.
Okay, Dane, so how many games, you're picking the Warriors, obviously. How many games does this series go?
I don't know. I think so much more in percentages, which is super nerdy, I understand. 5.
I will go Warriors in 6. I think it's longer than that, but I think that they win at home, and that's, I'll take them to steal one of the first two, and then they'll, I think it's 2-2 after 4, and then the Warriors win 5 in Toronto and 6 in Golden State to win it all.
You know what? I'm pivoting. I'm going to go hotter. Sweep.
Wow. Sweep. That's spicy. All right. Does Kevin Durant play?
No.
Oh, okay. Oh, wow. That's a way to end the podcast.
Yeah, there you go.
There we go. Find us on Score North, Apple Podcast, Spotify, wherever you find your podcast. Be sure to download the Score North app on the Google Play and the iTunes Store. We can be found there. Thanks for listening to Raised by Wolves. We'll be back next week.